Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesch of Flesch and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesch and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesch and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesch.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley, and we are glad you have joined us. Our show is brought to you each week by Flesch and Beck Law. Their number, 303-806-8886, trial-tested, trial-ready, is Kevin Flesch, and Kevin joins us in studio. Kevin, always good to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
Things pretty busy on the highways. I'm telling you, man, I don't care. You know, 12 to 1,
yep.
I sit in the studio. Other than that, I'm on the highway, and I am telling you, I had to go to Burthard yesterday and back down to Castle Rock. I mean, I put about 300 miles on my truck yesterday. But son, traffic is...
It's back to pre-pandemic normal.
Yeah.
And awful. We sat, a few weeks ago, we sat going up the mountains. We sat in traffic. It took us from our house in the tech center to Idaho Springs. It was 2 hours.
And that's normally?
45 minutes.
Yeah.
40 minutes?
Yeah, 40, 45 minutes.
It was nuts. And I'm like, oh, boy, this is. Well, it's unfortunate. But we live in a big city, and it's gotten bigger over the last 10 years. So we've got a lot of people using the roadways. So we just got to, you know, be calm.
Yeah.
Give lots of space, because people will move in on your... I hate that when you're giving the appropriate amount of space and people just are driving in and out of traffic. And
I tell you, this is really on our agenda today, but be careful for motorcycles out there right now. And I'm telling you, you know, I know the guys and gals are good on these things and they can cut in and out. But, man, when they drive down that – first of all, is that legal where they can drive in between the cars?
It is. It's so unsafe. I just can't believe how – and I've had lots of clients that were especially interested in the crotch rocket sort of motorcycles, like the folks that like to go really fast.
Right.
That there's just some adrenaline rush that they get from it. And they talk about that it's just the – most exhilarating thing to go down, because at any point somebody can just not paying attention and run, just knock you off your bike.
Yeah, and pothole. I mean, son, I've had some of my cars where I honestly thought I just tore up my car.
Yep.
You know,
I was talking to a guy yesterday. he called it the death wobble. He changed lanes and he hit something in the roadway and it just caused
and
his bike
do
to
that,
free fall.
About 110 on a bike, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, that there's close to death all the time. Mm-hmm. And the example that I gave with the 2 hours up to Idaho Springs, it was we were in, like, on 6th Avenue or somewhere, and someone on a motorcycle came down our right side, right along the shoulder, and they were in the lane of traffic. So I guess it was more safe than being in the middle between two lanes, but they just zipped right by us, and I'm like, okay, well... You wonder why you get a bad reputation sometimes with your doing that sort of, you know, it's just stay in the lane like everybody else and wait your turn. And
bicycle, I got to bring up a bicyclist.
You know.
I mean, we were going up Highway 67 off of Santa Fe up towards our church camp there up toward Rampart Range Road. And, man, this is just one lane coming up
right.
And one lane coming down.
Sitting in the middle. Yep.
Are going through there, and I mean, yeah, they got a right to do it, but man, there's so many other places you could ride safer.
I know, and you know, I've represented a bunch of bicyclists, and you've got a real the bicyclists out there. There's really reasonable guys and gals that do that.
Both of them.
Yep. and then there's the rest of the bicyclists that that have a real chip on their shoulder relating to. I mean, we're seeing it in downtown. I mean, you see all the bike lanes now of where things are designated, and they're pushing all of the cars out of downtown. I was downtown last week, and I was amazed by the amount of different types of things that are carrying people around. Right, we're not walking anymore. We have bicycles, which there's more and more bikes downtown. There's these scooter things. Mm-hmm. There's people on these. Other devices that I was just
petty things.
Yeah,
where you got the driver and everybody piles in
right
the back.
That too. Yep. You got those, and then just nobody wants to just walk around town, and they're using the sidewalks, they're using the bike lanes. I've got one right now. I've got a case where a woman was using the electric scooter, and there was a big area on the street just outside of 16th Street Mall that the city had taken out a big section of the roadway, and that really put anybody on notice, and she hit it and went flying right over, and hurt, broke a shoulder. And I mean, it's so we just got to be careful, because we've, I mean, it's nice that we have these alternatives, I guess, really, the all the different types of things that you can get around now in the city, because it is difficult and there's more people, but we just have to be really careful about how exactly we do it. Mm-hmm. Because you can just in the blink of an eye turn in right or left in your car and have somebody come up and not see him. I've had a couple of those sorts of cases right now, and it's really unfortunate when, because a human being just doesn't, they don't equate well with getting hit by a car, and the car is going to win that battle. And same thing if you're on a scooter or a bike or a motorcycle. So we just have to be careful, and hopefully the folks that are on those sorts of things are a little bit more reasonable and really being watchful about. I always make eye contact with people in a sidewalk, you know, they're walking across the street, or when I'm doing it too, to make sure the driver sees me, because I've had it happen downtown where person's just not paying attention.
Yeah, they're on their phone, and they just walk out, light turns, and they just, here they come.
Right, and you're like, okay, all right, you go ahead. And that's all you can do, because the alternative is to get upset, and, you know, and it's just not worth it.
Right.
Because everybody's trying to get somewhere. Everybody's late. I mean, it's just the way it is, because it's taking longer. We had 15 months of no traffic.
being late.
Right, and now now it's like, oh, my goodness. And I was I had a trip up to Wyoming a couple of weekends ago and drove up to Casper and back. And our traffic starts as soon as you get into Colorado now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is the north end of the state on I-25 is just as bad as driving down to Colorado Springs.
Right.
And it's amazing to me how many people are on the roadway, and it doesn't seem to matter what time of day it is. So if we can all give each other a little space and a little understanding, that'd be great. And follow the rules like you were standing in line with someone regularly, right? That drives me, it's sort of a rant today about the driving. But, you know, I was coming back from the mountains this weekend, and there was a horrible accident on I-25, and I was coming from 6th Avenue, and everybody's in traffic, and people are, like, trying to move up where you're merging, like, as far as they can.
I hate when everybody gets over it, and you can see it for miles.
Right.
All right. Then you get that guy that just blows up and gets right up to the accident and then puts his flasher on and it's over. That drives me crazy.
And there's two schools of thought about that, right? Because there's some people that think, well, if the merge is there, that you have to go as far up as possible to move over. But if you're in that same line of car, like I've had it where I can tell that I just need to get over and it's the best time for me to get over. And like the guy behind me should get over then too, but they don't.
Yeah,
you get over and then they keep going, or they go around. Or you'll have somebody that you're in that sort of merge lane and then you'll be sitting there, everybody will be sitting there, and then you'll have this person that decides, well, I'm more important than the rest of you, so I'm going to go up and merge again. The other one I love is when you get these off ramps where you can get off and then you can get back on. Like the people are going to save themselves like 20 minutes by going a quarter of a mile and you're all sitting in the same traffic, and then it only causes more problems. I want to understand the thought process. We should probably have a call-in show about that sometime and get folks to call in as to why, what they think is going on. Because if you're standing in line just as a human being in, you know, just regular line, not a car, but just, you know, waiting to get on a whatever, a bus, or you're at the amusement park and you're wanting to get on a roller coaster, it's not like people would come up to you and, you know, you're in these little merge things and say, oh, well, I'm going to try to walk in front of you, because you'd be like, hey, dude, what are you doing?
I know.
And so I always laugh when you're in a car how that common courtesy that you learned in kindergarten seems to go out the window.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I don't know, maybe it's the litigator in me, sometimes I will try to get up to that person and try to make eye contact. Mm-hmm. Like, what were you thinking?
Right.
I'd like to know so that I can understand why they think it's appropriate. But that's just me, I guess. And we see it, you know, in litigation with the personal injury cases where that'll happen, because sometimes these cases happen because of road rage situations. And when you get to depose someone, then I get a little bit of understanding. Normally they're just angry people. I mean, that's my surmise, is that just sometimes they're just like, no, the guy really upset me, so I brake checked him. and caused an accident, and too bad for him or her. And you're like, why? Why would you do that?
I know. Well, last week we talked a little bit about the initial consultation and the free consultation that's offered at Flesh and Beck Law for really any legal matter. But we just kind of went through that and just the good communication that establishes between, Kevin and his attorneys and the client. And today we thought we'd talk a little bit about the stages of personal injury cases. And what you're just talking about, Kevin, is something that you have to do with every accident. And some of them are probably pretty cut and clear to what yep. happened. But some, there's you got to do some investigation, yeah. fact-finding a little bit.
And absolutely.
So kind of start there and what's usually entailed in that.
Yeah, so a lot of times, that's one of the things we always say to people is no matter what the accident, make sure that the police are called and that there's a police report that's put together. Obviously, we've been through a time where with the pandemic, there weren't a lot of police going out and doing our accident cases, especially where someone wasn't bleeding on the side of the road. Well, we're back to normal now, or close to it, and so police should be going out and doing these accident reviews. You don't have to go do a counter report and that sort of thing. And it's important to have an individual who's trained in accident investigation go out and do an actual report, because it's helpful for us as the plaintiff's lawyers, but it's also helpful for the insurance companies to understand what's going on relating to the claims. Because it's more difficult if you don't have a police report, because then they have to do their own investigation, or we have to do our own investigation. And it really comes down to a lot of times eyewitness testimony about what took place. And sometimes that's very variable right. in the sense of credibility and who to believe. And so it's always better to have the police there. You'll get a better sense of insurance. You'll get a better sense of what really took place. And that if there's any real issues with regards to how exactly the accident happened, especially in significant accidents, they'll actually bring somebody out that's that's trained in accident reconstruction. An ACTAR person is the acronym, that's been trained and has gone through the process of being certified to give opinions about maybe forces or duration of braking and take good pictures and take measurements that are going to help you later in making some decisions. So always be willing to have the police show up and figure these things out
right.
Because it's going to benefit you in the long run. All right. So, but if you don't get to us right away, we have the free consultation. We talk about what it is that we need to do. We go out and try to harvest some of those things. The other thing that people need to recognize is we have a lot of video that's around the city now, the Halo cameras and all of those other things that may be available for intersections and things like that. But they only keep those things for probably maybe up to 30 days. But it's more likely 2 weeks or a week, and then they dump that footage. Right. And so you'll want to make sure that you get to see someone right away so we can get that information and gather it so that we have it, because sometimes that's the best evidence we have.
Sure.
And sometimes I've got a couple of cases right now where people have their own dash cams. Those dash cam photo, video is also really beneficial. And it can also be really detrimental depending upon what it is, but right. it is what it is. But we need to know about that and see whether or not that's helpful. Because the idea that I have relating to these cases is we're always trying to get to the truth as to what happened. I'm not trying to create a case that isn't there. And so a lot of people think about those sorts of things. Oh, maybe I can create, an injury case. Well, you really can't. Normally, you'll get it mm-hmm. figured out. And the adversarial process, especially through the litigation process, will cause the case to have trouble if you're trying to make things up as you go along. But what's important is we want to get the real facts, and we want to get all of those out. And it happens pre-suit so that we're getting all of that information for the demand to send to the insurance company so that they can do their evaluation and give us an offer and see if we can resolve the case prior to litigation. But we also want to make sure we have all of our ducks in a row before we file a lawsuit
right.
so that because we have to disclose a lot of evidence initially in our initial disclosures. How it works in Colorado is in your standard car accident case, we make a demand. Demand doesn't go anywhere. We're not able to settle the case what we think is a reasonable dollar amount to resolve it.
And that demand is usually presented after the person has completed treatment?
Yes.
Okay.
It's always my practice. I very rarely will want to present a demand to the insurance company prior. I just don't do it because the treatment can last a long time, and the treatment can cause you to have other problems that may increase the value. And we only settle the case once in Colorado.
Right.
So if you are only able to settle it once, we want to make sure that we have all of the information relating to your injuries.
And the message there is just be patient with this, you know.
And I'm always happy. You know, the statute of limitations on a car accident is 3 years in Colorado. That's a long time to be treating. Very few cases actually end up you're treating for that length of period of time. And so most of the cases, your treatment is done within the statute of limitations. We're able to make a demand. And then if we're not able to resolve it, then we file suit. So we have lots of time. And I'm not, you know, there are other firms out there that will try to push you into settling your case quickly. There's really no advantage to doing that because sometimes, and people get really antsy about it because they see sort of the end game and it's money and it's for your injuries. So you want to make sure that you have all of those injuries inventoried or made sure that you understand what those injuries are and the implications to your life because that's how you value a personal injury case. So I can't do it on day two after an accident because you're not done treating. And once you're done treating, then it's our time to really go and do the work we need to do.
Right. Once again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Legal Talk, brought to you by Flesh and Beck Law. Once again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. So once you, you know, the person's finished treating, you present your demand and all, and then you start getting with the insurance company. So you start talking about, you know, the resolution of it. I mean, is there a percentage that you can say in your years that go to have to go to trial? Because I assume most of them want to settle too. I mean, you know, they're not excited about going to trial.
But. No, it's I would so as a percentage. So at the demand stage, I would say probably maybe 40% of the cases resolve themselves at a demand stage. So what we've done is we've got the client has completed their treatment. We've gotten all of their losses put together. So we're going to have all of their medical expenses, all of their lost wages, detail, any other expenses that they may have had. In a significant case, it may be things that they would have done to keep their home updated, you know, anything that is related to the car accident where you had to pay somebody to do work that you would normally do is a damage. So we include that. So those are all what are called not economic damages. And then we would then be asking for an award for pain and suffering or other damages related to sort of how it has impacted your life. Those are non-economic damages. And that's the bulk of normally what the demand is. We do have the ability to also raise if you had surgery or if you had some sort of scarring, any sort of damages relating to that. That's a separate category of damages. So we put all those damages together. We would provide the insurance company with all the medical records and all of the other receipts and everything documenting what we have for damages. We would send that to them. They would have a period of time to review it. And if the case gets resolved through that stage, perfect. Then you get a general release. You sign that, basically giving up. And what the insurance company does when they offer you money is all they're doing really is they're saying, we're willing to pay you X amount of dollars to take your case from you, that we're going to resolve this and so that you don't have to go through a lawsuit and we don't have to go through that process. So it's a general release. You're releasing all of your claims. And then once that release is signed, it's normally 2 weeks to 30 days that we get a check. And then we disperse the check based upon anything that we have to pay back for subrogation or liens or anything else, the attorney fees, the costs for what we've spent in the way of things that I have to write a check for in the way of costs. And then the remainder goes to the client. So that's easy. That's what we would hope all of the cases would go, because it's the best for the client in the sense of not having it dragged out. They don't have to go through a deposition. They don't have to answer interrogatories. They don't have to go through a mediation. They don't have to be, you know, all the anxiety of, oh, am I going to trial or not? Because there's a lot of anxiety for clients because the majority of my clients have never been in a courtroom, let alone in a trial.
Sure.
And so they're very anxious about that and the unknown.
Now, sometimes, you know, you get it settled, but then you say, hey, we're going to go to trial. You set the trial date. I know there have been times because we've had a scheduled recording or something, and you go, oh, they settled this morning an hour before trial. So sometimes that happens.
Yes, it does. It doesn't happen a lot. It's interesting. My experience is I don't have a lot of that happen in comparison to other folks, and I'm trying to figure out why that is. If it's, I think the cases that we try are generally cases that we've just not been able to. I've got a good relationship with the other side, and we've basically done everything we can to resolve the case, and we're just too far apart. Mm-hmm. And those are the cases that we try. So it doesn't happen very often at the last minute, but every once in a while it does, and it can always happen. I had a case not too long ago that I thought was for sure going to trial, and then the claims adjuster changed, and pandemic happened, and we resolved it. And so that happens too. But normally what happens is, so we talked about the first 40% that resolve. Then that second 60%, we file suit, and within 30 or 60 days after filing suit and the insurance company potentially having to answer, they come up with more money, we're able to resolve the case. Right. So then there's another probably 30% that are left of the total that we see. 30-35% where we go through litigation, we get some depositions taken, we do the initial discovery, we do initial disclosures, and then we set it for mediation. And I'd say 25, the majority, so 80% of that last 35% settle at mediation.
Okay.
Probably another 5% of those cases that look like they're going to trial will settle just before trial, within a month or two after mediation. And then the last 5-10% of the cases that we have, we try those cases, and they get the unfortunately the client gets the whole experience all the way through.
Sure.
Like I just was in federal court within the last month, tried a case where the client had the accident in 2017, so we're in 2021 now. Mm-hmm. And he had neck surgery, he had a discectomy, he had $1,000 worth of medical expenses, actually came out of it really well, did a really nice, the surgeon did an impeccable job in getting him back to, almost back to normal, but he had to wait. You know, he had those surgeries in 2018, and then he had to wait 3 years to get to court, to actually get his case heard, which, under the circumstances, it was actually pretty quick because we had 15 months where
sure.
we had no jury trials.
Right.
But it's still one of those situations where it's too long. I mean, that's way too long to wait. So we had a good verdict, and you get interest on your money from the date to date.
Oh, okay.
So, yep. Okay. And so in Colorado, that's either 8 or 9%. And so when you start compounding that, in this particular case, we got a good judgment, and then we had interest on top of it. The interest was another 30% of the judgment. It was substantial because he had to wait so long. And the idea value and the value of that judgment, then you figure out the compounding of interest on an annual basis.
Sure.
And that's added into the judgment.
Right.
But it's one of those situations where people need to understand that when they think about what it is that they want in resolving their case. Most people don't want to go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
Most people look at that and look at the risk, because there's some real risk, and then we talk about risks. We're having to articulate the case and persuade six people to find unanimously on a dollar value. Obviously, those jurors don't pay the judgment, but they all have to agree after hearing all the evidence. And think about your life when you have to have six people in a room and persuade them to do something. It's not
sure.
It's not easy.
Yeah, no doubt. So when you go to trial, that means you have filed a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So what's kind of involved in just that terminology and lawsuit? Cost, I mean,
yeah.
What's kind of involved in just filing a lawsuit?
Yeah, so we have to, in Colorado, we have to provide three things in the lawsuit. First, we have to provide a summons. And a summons is basically telling the defendant that they have to answer the complaint. The complaint will be attached to the summons. And the complaint is something that says what happened, why you're asserting the claims against the defendant, and why you think the defendant is responsible. And then finally, a request for damages that the defendant will have to pay. That's basically what's in a complaint. And they're not overly complicated most of the time, especially in an auto accident case. We're really talking about negligence most of the time, that the person didn't act like a normal person would, and that they caused an injury, and that injury has damages, and you have to pay those damages. So the complaint is that. And then the other thing you need is a cover sheet. The state has, the district court in particular, has a cover sheet that talks about sort of the management of the case, and so you provide that to them. So that's where you start. You file that. You have to file that within 3 years in a car accident. You actually have to file it with the court within the 3-year time period. If you don't, you lose your opportunity to bring the claim, period. Mm-hmm. You just can't bring it. And then relating to the what happens next is that you then have to serve that person on the defendant. Most of the time that's pretty easy, but sometimes defendants have moved or they're somewhere we can't find them. Sometimes the service on defendant can be a problem. Now, if they have insurance, luckily in Colorado the rule was changed a few years ago where we make reasonable efforts to get in contact with that defendant and get them served. If we're unable to do that, then we can ask the court to allow us to serve their insurance company. The insurance company isn't named, but they then would be an agent because theoretically they're in contact with that person. They would be in contact with them, and that's how the process starts.
Gotcha. Once again, you've been listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh, Flesh and Beck Law. Their number 303-806-8886. And, you know, next week, Kevin, we'll have to pick up just to talking about the different types of settlements, you know, the time limits to bring all this together. And, you know, but when you talk about what happens at trial, let's touch on this and we'll tease this a little bit and pick it up next week. Is, I mean, is it pretty quick where, I mean, you just get up and say what happened to your client, the defense gets up and says what they happen, or, I mean, are they usually a couple of days with, with a motor vehicle or
one it's day? Normally 2 days. So it normally, what's interesting is people don't realize how long trials take. The fastest you can pick a jury, normally a jury of six people, is a morning. You normally, by the time they come in, they get advised, you then have the judge tell them a bunch of stuff. You maybe get 15 minutes or a half hour with them to talk with them on each side.
Okay.
You normally have a jury picked by noon on the first day. So you've already gotten half a day gone. Then you have opening statements, and then you put on evidence. The evidence normally, in just your basic case, takes a day, day and a half. So you're looking now into a third day. You have closing, so you get to summarize the evidence, and then the jury gets to deliberate. The last case I had, the jury deliberated for almost 10 hours. So we had a 4-day trial, and then they spent a whole nother day trying to figure out what they were going to do. So it can be as fast as a day and a half, probably, and as most in a, just a general car accident, a whole week.
Sure.
I mean, but in the case that I just finished, we had 12 experts. A lot of evidence and a lot of education. You've got to educate, you need to persuade, and then you need to ask them to do something for you.
Gotcha.
It's very interesting.
Kevin, always great information. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Flesh and Beck Law, once again, as we mentioned, free consult. And hey, if we didn't mention this today, but if you got a case that maybe you're trying to handle by yourself and you would like Kevin just to take a second look at that and see if you're on a right path with that, he is absolutely happy to do that for you as well. Again, the number is 303-806-8886. The website is fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. Thanks for being with us today on Legal Talk. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Functional Medicine with Dr. Ben coming up next.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law. 303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. Or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5-6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where our reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298-191, Equal Credit Lender.
This is KLZ 560 AM, your home station.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery. Now, here's your host, Dan Muir.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, Tennessee, and Phoenix, Arizona. I am your host, Dan Muir, and on the line I have the one and only Dr. Ben. Doc, how are you today?
Oh, doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, yeah. It's your show. We let you on your show. This is, excuse me here a second, Doc. I got to take a sip of my coffee. That's real. Boy. Oh, man. I'll tell you what. Coffee gets me going in the morning, you know. I mean, but I was reading on your Facebook post.
It's 12:30, Dan.
Is it? Oh, okay. Well, that also goes into sleep, but we can talk about that another time. Yeah. So I love going through your Facebook post. I do all the show prep there because your Facebook posts are fantastic. Once again, it's the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix. And you said on there, should you take a break from coffee? Doc, I don't know if I could survive if I did that.
Yeah, I thought a little bit before posting that one up there. We might lose a couple of followers on the page. Speaking of that, we're going to hit 40,000 followers on the page this week. So
fantastic.
That's exciting. We got a lot of people out all over the world that are watching our videos and paying attention to our page, and we're just having a great time educating. But coffee is one of those kind of it's like wine, it's like marijuana. You can find not like that.
Right.
You can find research showing that. I mean, there's some people that think marijuana is like, you know, the best thing ever, and there's all this research showing that it's great for this. Same thing with wine. Like, if you have two glasses of wine every night, you know, your heart disease risk is going to go down, and all this stuff. And the same thing is with coffee, and that people say, you know what, coffee, there's antioxidant value, there's, you know, these other things. And you can find a study for almost anything showing that it's going to be of value. So, you know, coffee is one of those. Some people just love the flavor. And they just, that smell, I just wake up and it's just, I just can't get enough of it. And then other people, it's literally because they are trying to get a change. So what I was talking about in that post was, that for some people, they are using external things to change their state. Ooh. Meaning, some people have a hard time going to sleep. And so what do?
Well, they take the melatonin or they get on the A train or whatever. They take something so they can fall asleep.
They take something, or they're smoking weed.
Oh, yeah.
Or they're drinking alcohol. I've got tons of patients that the reason they drink alcohol is to shut their brain down. The reason they smoke weed is to shut their brain down. The reason they exercise at nighttime for an hour until they're exhausted is to shut their brain down. And so people will do things at nighttime to try to shut the brain down. In the morning, we're trying to stimulate that brain. And so that's where a lot of people come in with the coffee aspect, is that they're trying to get themselves revved up and like, wow, man, I'm just having a hard time getting out of bed, and I'm going to be a slow starter, and I don't really get going until 10 o'clock, and then I kind of crash in the afternoon, and then I need another shot of coffee there, espresso, whatever you got, your mocha latte. I've never drank coffee, so I don't know all the words.
You are the wellness doctor. You are the wellness doctor.
It's easy for me to say, should you take a break from coffee? But here's the thing that happens. If you're out there and you're drinking coffee, and this is what I ask patients all the time. I'm like, well, what happens if you quit for a day, a week, a month, anything like that? And if somebody says, oh, I'm really tired, or oh, I'm going to get a headache, or they say, not a big deal, I've done it before, and I just really like the flavor. You know, there's a difference between those two things. Kind of like alcohol, if you're like, drinking three drinks a night, and I go, well, what happens if you don't drink tonight? And they're like, they get kind of that look, and they pause. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, yeah, they kind of need that. And then otherwise they go, oh, yeah, I did a cleanse a couple months ago, and I'm totally fine. I can stop whenever. But it's just kind of a habit that we do after, you know, after coming back from the golf course or whatever it is. You know, they've got their little routines. Sure. So coffee ultimately is a stimulant. Coffee is going to rev up the adrenal glands. It's going to give us this boost, but it's an artificial boost. And in the vast majority of people in this country, they are dealing with what is called adrenal fatigue. And the adrenal glands, adrenal, they sit on top of the kidneys.
Okay.
And they are going to respond to stress. Have you ever heard of stress there, Dan?
Yes, yes. I'm well aware of stress. Trust me.
Yeah,
we're on a first-name basis.
Yeah, it's kind of like Santa Claus. You don't have to believe in it, Dan. Just quit believing it. You'll be fine.
There you go.
So we've all got jobs and cars and kids and COVID and presidents and anything else you want to stress about in there? Probably.
Well, lots of things.
And yet, you know, everybody's got stressors, but not everybody is going to be adrenally exhausted. Some people have less stressors than you and more stressed out. Other people have more stressors and are less stressed out. So it's not an apples to apples comparison. What we do know is that blood sugar swings, especially blood sugar dips, are one of the biggest stressors to the adrenal gland. So one of the reasons why we focus so much on stabilizing blood sugar. I wrote my blood sugar book last year, Blood Sugar Doesn't Lie. You can grab that on Amazon. I wrote that because people are just not aware of all the things glucose imbalances can do to the body. And so this is a huge part of the process, is to get it dialed in to where the body is consistent in as many different states as possible. Otherwise, we have to do things like coffee to whip the adrenals. But if the adrenals are already tired, it's like whipping a tired horse.
Ooh.
So the horse will go, oh, I got a little bit, and kind of jumps up and goes a little bit. But then it's like, holy cow, I just ran for another 50 yards here, and I'm crashing again. And that's why you need another shot in the afternoon, or you jump onto your Red Bull, or take a Diet Dr. Pepper, or all these things I've heard over the years. People are like, oh, I'm crashing again. I need an outside source, outside stimulation. So when we start talking about functional medicine, it's all about getting to the underlying why. Why is the body tired? Why is it fatigued? Why is it crashing? And that's what we've got to figure out. And that's why people get their energy back. They get their get up and go, their ability to get rid of their brain fog. All these things start changing when you get to those root causes, when you help the gut and the blood sugar and the adrenals and the thyroid and all these different systems that are out of balance. That's when people don't really need that coffee anymore. They can have some, but it's not a need, and it's not going to be pushing their adrenals. It's not going to be pushing their body to be able to manage their fatigue levels.
So, you know, Doc, first of all, I want to know who told you about my addiction to Diet Dr. Pepper. I mean, I don't know how you figured that out.
Was that you, Dan?
That was me, yes. But, you know, I look at, so, you know, when you're driving around in the morning, you see these huge lines at Starbucks. I mean, people are waiting in lines and to get that Starbucks coffee in the morning. And then, you know, people then, you know, like you say, they're drinking, you know, the Diet Dr. Pepper or whatever it might be in the afternoon, a regular Coke or whatever. What are we doing to our bodies when we're constantly stimulating them like that to keep moving?
Well, it's kind of like, think about a wild animal. Think about, you know, anything non-human like that, or even your dog or whatever. But think about a wild animal. And during, you know, you're out elk hunting, and it's the season, you know, come fall when all these gunshots are going off and those elk are running this way and running that way and constantly just going, you know, eventually they get fatigued, and it affects their pregnancies, and it, you know, there's a lot of stressors put on that. And so, you know, we can only handle stressors for so long, and then we crash. And this is what we call adrenal fatigue. I just had a lady today. She's been diagnosed with what's called fibromyalgia for 15 years. I have patients that are diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, all these different things that basically the body is crashing. It's collapsing. It can't support itself anymore. It's had too much of the bad stuff, not enough of the good stuff, and it is shot.
Totally makes sense. So how do you recover from that? How do you recover from, you know, constantly being needing to be stimulated? How can you make that transition so you can be healthier?
Yeah, absolutely. So number one is to figure out which systems are out of balance, because the adrenal glands, when we're talking about these stress glands, they're going to respond to stress of all different types. I had a lady come in this morning, and she's got a chronic viral infection that we've seen in the blood work. This is probably what we call Epstein-Barr virus, which is the monovirus. And if you saw my post last week, I was talking about how all these COVID long haulers that are out, which they're actually talking about setting up special clinics for people that have had COVID and are having all these symptoms, over 100 different reported symptoms post-COVID. And then you're like, okay, well, that doesn't make sense, because coronaviruses are like the common cold. And how often does cold or flu, something like that, turn into a chronic issue where, you know, you're years down the road still dealing with it?
No, I've never heard of it, actually. No.
Yeah. No, actually they don't. But things like West Nile, some people still have symptoms from West Nile. Things like chicken pox, they come back later as shingles. Herpes, hepatitis, mono, a lot of these viruses are going to be long-term, and they can get reactivated. And that's what happens with these COVID long haulers. There was a study done that they looked at they did blood work in these patients that are having COVID long hauler symptoms or long COVID. And what they found was that the majority of them had reactivation of their Epstein-Barr virus, which is the monovirus. If you've known anybody that's had that, it's this severe fatigue and brain fog and all these symptoms that people are experiencing from COVID. But it's actually that kind of stimulated. We know that, you know, this is the tough part for me as a clinician, is we don't really know what COVID-19 is. You know, we know that this came out of a lab in Wuhan, China, you know, that's the consensus now. And yet, you know, was it tinkered with? Did it change form? Is this the original type of the virus, or did they, you know, were they playing around with it for something else? We don't know, and so we don't know all the ins and outs of what it does to the body and everything else. And so, for even people that had mild COVID-19 reactions and even hardly any at all, they still have seen this reactivation of that Epstein-Barr virus.
That is fascinating. So do they know what's, I guess maybe you said this, but do they know what's causing the reactivation, or is it just some sort of time release thing? All of a sudden, well, guess what? You're getting reactivated.
So it's like, have you ever had shingles?
No, I have not. Now, I did have the chicken pox as a kid, but I've never had shingles.
Yep. So knock on wood that you haven't had shingles, because most people don't enjoy that.
No, it would not be fun.
most people get shingles because what happens to their bodies.
I don't know what happens.
They get run down.
Oh, okay.
They get stressed. Okay. They get depleted. Their immune system's not working as well. My brother and his wife, probably 10 years ago, had a house fire. They had to gut the house, move out for a year, 3 little kids. Both him and his wife both got shingles over that year of them being out of the house and trying to rebuild it and all these things, because their immune systems got so out of bounds, their bodies got so depleted that they couldn't maintain this immune system to keep that virus down. And that's what's happening with this COVID, and that's what happens with our adrenal glands. And so you know, there's viruses are going to stress out the adrenals. There's chronic stressors like jobs and relationships and all types of things that are going to be chronically pushing down on the adrenals. But you've got to figure out what else is out of balance. And in that body, if the liver's off, if the thyroid's off, if the gut's off, any of these things are out of balance, that's when we have to start going through step by step, fixing those different systems, and also giving the adrenals a little bit of support. And so there are supplements that are helpful for the adrenal glands. But if somebody just takes those supplements, it's not going to fix it. They've got to fix the why. They've got to fix those underlying imbalances.
So, Doc, part of functional medicine, are you able to help people manage their stress better so that they don't get, I mean, everybody's going to have stressful situations, but like you said earlier, you know, people can manage it differently. Do you teach people how to manage their stress so they don't get to that point to where maybe the shingles flare up?
Absolutely. And that's one of the big reasons why we do what's called a brain map. And the brain maps are our way of looking at the electrical activity of what's going on in the brain. So just like you've seen an EKG of the heart, where they put the electrodes on the heart and have you do go on the treadmill, that's looking at electrical activity of the heart. We're looking at electrical activity of the brain. And this can tell us if somebody has anxiety, depression. FDA approved it as a diagnostic tool in 2013 for ADD. We can see insomnia, Alzheimer's, Asperger's, autism, all types of different things. And from there, if there are issues in that brain map, then we can do what's called neurofeedback as well and actually train the brain to not be as revved up, which is a miracle for so many people.
That sounds fascinating. Okay, Doc, I want to switch gears here in a second. You are listening to The Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix, Arizona. Get a hold of Dr. Ben and the gang at 970-282-1173 or go to fmcenters.com. Okay, you just mentioned it in what you were talking about. ADD, attention deficit, and ADHD. Man, I'm telling you, Doc, this runs rampant in my family. I'm sure I've got it. It's everywhere. And can it be reversed? This, again, another question on your Facebook page.
I wasn't going to judge Dan. It's okay.
What'd you say?
were you talking?
Were you talking?
So here's the thing. There's many different types of ADD. Most people say, oh, you got ADD or ADHD or whatever, but ADD is attention deficit disorder. And then there's different types. Dr. Daniel Amen, one of the world's best neurologists, especially in brain function like this, he says there's seven types of ADD. One of them is ADHD with the hyperactive component. And that's the typical one that you think about with kiddos, right?
Right.
So it's that six-year-old boy sitting in class, he has to sit on his hands, otherwise he's bouncing around and squirreling, looking over there and, you know, tossing a pencil at somebody and poking somebody else, and he just can't sit still. That's ADHD. But even more rampant is just this inattentive ADD, which is that could be the cheerleader sitting in the back of the class. It could be the kid that's just sitting there picking his nose, looking off at the squirrel out the window. You know, this inattentive, where these kids, they get forgotten because that hyperactive kid, what's the teacher thinking?
Always thinking, you know, it's just uncontrollable. You know, what's the kid on, right?
We got to do something.
Got to do something.
Squeaky wheel, right?
Yep.
But the inattentive one, okay, so they're getting a C minus and, you know, mom and dad are disappointed in them, but, you know, the kid's not causing any problems and they're just sitting there and they'll smile at you and be nice and whatever, but they're just not getting anything done. So I've got a patient, she's up here at Windsor High School, a sophomore, and she went through our program this year. When she came in, she hadn't turned in her homework like she needed to in years. She had been getting D's and F's since fifth grade, and her room was an absolute pigsty there. Couldn't even get through it. And mom and dad were just at wit's end. Mom would spend an hour a night trying to get her to get her homework done and all these things. And it was a traditional ADD inattentive pattern in the brain map. And so we started doing neurofeedback. We started training these brainwave patterns, doing some of the metabolic work, the things that we do with patients. And what we found is that her brain started responding and it started learning this new skill. And that new skill was, hey, stay in the right range and don't fall out into this low focus and this daydreaming state. And what happened was pretty much a miracle. She went from D's and F's since fifth grade. She finished the semester, the spring semester, with straight A's.
Wow.
Her room is spotless.
Wow.
And her dad said, and her backpack's like all organized and she finds stuff in there and everything. And you know, it wasn't mom and dad whipping her to get her room cleaned. She could actually see it and pay attention. And this is what happens with people that have this low focus state. They could walk right by a pot of boiling water and not even see it. They could walk through their room and go, oh, yeah, it's fine. I know where everything's at. And they go, oh, what about all those dishes?
oh, yeah, there are dishes there. They just don't really even get it that it's there, versus somebody that's got the opposite brain pattern. They walk by that boiling pot of water, and they can't even leave the room without thinking, oh, my gosh, is somebody gonna turn that off? Is somebody going to watch it? Who's in the kitchen? All those things. So she had this pattern where her body just and brain was not able to stay in that good range, see what's going on around her, pay attention. Her intelligence was not the issue at all. She was actually a very bright young lady, and yet she hadn't turned her homework in like she needed to for years.
You know, Doc, you've changed her life now forever. I mean, she's going to be a productive person. She's going to get things handled. She's going to be very successful now because you were able to isolate the problem that she was having and correct it. That's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. And this is what I say all the time, especially with kids, is that most of them are going to hit their ceiling at some point. Some, that was when they were in fifth grade. They hit their ceiling, and they're like, oh, my gosh, they're barely even getting through, and high school is a struggle, and they just, they're going to be working at McDonald's, and that's about it. And other people, they in high school that happens. Other people in college, other people, it's when they get married. I had a lady from our, we used to have a office down in Dallas where we did some work down there, and on the neurofeedback side, and this young lady, she went to Vanderbilt University. She got a full ride, which is a pretty prestigious school, and so to do that, she busted her butt in high school.
Absolutely.
She got to Vanderbilt, and she ended up dropping out in December, didn't even finish her first semester.
What happened?
She hit her ceiling. And and for her, she made it through high school, did all that. But college hit the ceiling. Why? Because the anxiety, all these brain issues, getting into those classrooms of 150 students, the being away from mom and dad, eating weird food, just the stress of all these different things, it finally got to her. She hit her ceiling. And so we were able to help train her brain, get it to calm down, get her back into good range. She went back the following year, got her scholarship again. But still, what that did to somebody, especially that overachieving and high-driving, for them have to admit that, I got to take a year off and, I failed, everything.
And then people around her are thinking, is she on drugs? What is she doing to change her life? What happened to her? It's like, and it really, it was like her system was overwhelmed, and you were able to correct that and bring that back into line so now she can function in that environment.
Absolutely. And now who knows what her ceiling is going to be. It's way past anything that she was able to do at that time. And that's what we see all the time. People come in and they say, oh, my gut's off. My digestion's not right with that. I've got fatigue. Somebody told me my thyroid's out of balance. I can't lose these 30 pounds. And my brain's out of balance. I'm anxious. I've got brain fog. I can't stay present, engaged. And that's really what we look at, is all those things. Plus, if the brain's involved, that's when we start training the brainwave patterns to do something different. And we see those miracles where people come in and they're less reactive. They're more contemplative. They can process things easier. They can stay more connected with their spouse, their kids, just be more in the present moment with real life.
Now, once again, Doc, now I'm sure you've got the magic pill for this, right? One size fits all. All we got to do is, call the 800 number and it'll be delivered to us. Is that how this works?
$49.99 a month. And,
there you go.
You'll be just right.
Maybe a pyramid involved in there somewhere. I don't know. But
yes.
but Doc, how does it? So I want to read this last one that you posted that we were going to talk about today. The body heals from the inside out. Fix the gut, liver, blood sugar, inflammation, brain, and see miracles take place. And that's what you do at Functional Medicine, right?
Absolutely. That post was a picture of a lady came in.
Oh, and crazy.
When we first started with her hand, she said she had lost more skin off of that, peeled off more skin than she had skin on her whole body over the years. She had this psoriasis on her hands. And there's cracks, bleeding.
It's terrible.
The itchy pain, everything that she experienced was horrendous. And she had tried pretty much every topical thing you could imagine. But things like that on the skin are not from the outside. They are from the inside out. And that's what we look at.
is we've got to get to that root cause or root multiple roots causes on there. And so what we went through with her, she was full-blown diabetic. We reversed her diabetes. She had leaky gut. We fixed up her gut lining. Her liver was really toxic. Enzymes were high. We reversed those. And we went through system by system by system until she was able to start repairing. The second picture on there was actually taken yesterday in the office, and she was up front showing everybody just how great they looked.
It was a miracle. Probably have, I'm telling you, it was amazing.
A little bit, but you can totally tell that's night the same person's hand, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Night and day, though, how it looks. I mean, it was incredible, the transformation that had happened.
Absolutely. And so there was no magic juju berry cream that we said, oh, rub this on your hands and you're going to be fine. But we, I know, that I saw that on late night TV. But what we did was to start from the ground floor. And we said, okay, this system's off, that system's off, that system's off. And we just went through step by step through that process. So if you're out there, if a loved one is out there and needs help, have them give us a call, 970-282-1173. We love to get deep into where somebody's problems are coming from. This is not a one-stop shop for everybody to do the same process or same protocol. We've got to dig deep into exactly what you have going on, and then we take you hand in hand and go through this process. If you're committed, if you're willing and motivated, want to get your life back, that's what we're here for. I had a patient last week from Los Angeles, one from Louisiana, one from Montana. We work with patients all over the country, and we love to touch base with you. And Alicia, our new patient coordinator, she'll walk you through what that process looks like. 970-282-1173. And we are a little bit out, probably 6 weeks or so, to get a new patient appointment, but we're going to do our best to get you in as soon as we can and just take you to that next level of health.
Yeah, so now's the time to call. Get that appointment with Doc. 6 weeks, you know, and you can change your life forever, gang. This has been great. Doc, again, this has been so informative, wonderful show. And thank you so much for taking this time to be with us and to enlighten us on everything that you've got going on.
Absolutely. Everybody out there, make it a great, great rest of your week. Have a good fourth. Stay safe. And just really start asking why. You know, why are these health challenges there? And we'll talk to you next week.
Wonderful. Thanks, Doc. And that was Dr. Ben. You've been listening to The Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix. And again, the phone number, 970-282-1173, or go to fmcenters.com. I've been your host, Dan Muir. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dan Muir and Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.
The health advice and opinions on this broadcast are those of the host and guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of this station, Crawford Broadcasting Company, its staff, management, or sponsors.